When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to episode 256 of TV's Top 5, The Hollywood Reporter's TV Podcast. I'm Leslie Goldberg, the West Coast TV editor, and I'm joined as always by the great Dan Feinberg, The Hollywood Reporter's chief TV critic. How's it going, Dan?
It goes. Coming to you from Chicago, where I will be spending the start of the Passover holiday. Hopefully, all technology will hold up, and this will be a fine, if somewhat short, recording. But otherwise, happy Passover to those who observe.
That's right. And some sad news to report this week. If you are a fan of The Golden Bachelor, they are no longer married. They are divorcing. So pour one out for the poor Golden Bachelor. We hardly knew you.
I'm shocked. I truly don't know how to handle a relationship stemming from one of those shows failing. I'm torn to pieces, Leslie.
Yeah, I can hear it in your voice, Dan.
Okay. May just be pizza hangover, one or the other.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Totally the pizza. Not that we could care less about The Bachelor or The Golden Bachelor.
Maybe that too.
Sure. Yeah. Well, getting started with headlines.
Number one.
On the overall deals front, this one's a big one. Tyler Perry and BET have extended their partnership with a new multi-year overall deal that now runs through 2028 and includes renewals for, get ready, Sistas, The Oval, Assisted Living, House of Pain, Zatima, Ruthless, All the Queen's Men, and Bruh, as well as the order for the new scripted series titled Route 187. Perry's pack dates back to 2017, when the deal was originally with Paramount Global predecessor Viacom.
I will definitely confess that several of those shows I'm not sure I knew existed.
Yeah.
But if you wrote them down, I assume that they're all real. Continuing along with headlines, Apple has renewed For All Mankind for a fifth season. Yay, though you can go back a handful of episodes and listen to when Alan Sepinwall joined us and we talked about the fourth season finale. When was that, Leslie?
That was episode 244, January 19th of this year.
Which let us down a tiny bit, but you know, life goes on. Still a very good show. Glad to have it back. And in addition, Apple has ordered a spinoff to For All Mankind, focused entirely on the beloved character of Danny Stevens. So everyone will be very excited about that. No. I kid. It's actually a spinoff following the Soviet space race set around the Star City facilities. Expect it will give people the opportunity to say Soyuz a lot. Elsewhere at Apple, the streamer has ordered the thriller Down Cemetery Road, based on the novel by Slow Horses author Mick Herron, with Emma Thompson and Ruth Wilson. I like both of those people. Set to star.
Yeah, I mean, I want to go back and touch on For All Mankind for a quick second, but it's really, this is one of the first times that Apple is really expanding on one of its originals and turning that into a franchise. You know, we talked a little bit last week about their Universal Monsters show that they renewed for a second season and announced a couple different spinoffs. Or they said that they were developing spinoffs, but I don't think we have official details yet. Look, this is a brand new original IP with For All Mankind. Congratulations, Apple. You're doing what everyone else in the industry does.
Also, five seasons. I mean, it is still the longest running Apple original, isn't it? So they've had
it's
a number
pretty close
of shows.
To it. Yeah, this was a launch day for Apple show.
It was a launch day for Apple show, and it was launched along with C, which no longer exists, and along with The Morning Show, which has only had three seasons. So it's charging along forward and obviously is a success for Apple. So, yay.
Yeah, that's right. Elsewhere, with production underway on season 4 with Liam Hemsworth taking over for Henry Cavill, Netflix announced this week that The Witcher has been renewed for a fifth and final season. Both seasons 4 and 5 will film back-to-back in a cost-saving effort for Netflix. Not surprising there. It's an expensive show.
I'm sad. I'm not really sad, but speaking of shows ending that actually did appear to make some people sad and other people kind of more actively angry. At Paramount Plus, the animated Star Trek Lower Decks will conclude with its upcoming fifth season at the streamer. lots of people seemed very, very unhappy about that. And somehow unable to be happy about the fact that the announcement came in the same sort of bundle as a renewal for Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which will be its fourth season. So definitely, though, it seemed as if there was some, I don't want to say outrage, because outrage would be off, but disappointment about the cancellation of this one, because people have grown to feel great affection for it, even if I didn't particularly like where it started and sort of checked out. But I know it has a lot of fans.
Yeah, lots of movement in the Star Trek franchise over at Paramount Plus, because obviously Discovery and Picard ended, so now they're kind of looking at the next wave of what's coming. And you have the, you know, the Section 31 movie with Michelle Yeoh returning, and you've got Starfleet Academy coming. So yeah, lots of movement there. On the development front, Lionsgate is teaming with Korean filmmaker Park Chan-wook to adapt his feature film Old Boy as a TV series. A network or streaming service is not yet attached. Dan, thoughts on that one?
Interesting. He's done good work on TV. I speak again about Little Drummer Girl, which I thought he did great work on. I thought he did very fine work on The Sympathizer, which is currently airing, which he co-created with Don McKellar and directed the first three episodes for. So if he's feeling good about the work that he gets to do in the streaming space, by all means, probably this will be more likely to be successful or at least embraced than the Spike Lee American English language remake of Old Boy was. So this kind of lets him control the narrative, which he, of course, created as a feature. Continuing along over at Amazon, Amazon has tapped Travis Kelce to host Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? Or a spinoff of Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader, which will feature celebrities. No word yet on whether Travis Kelce is or is not smarter than a fifth grader. He did just apparently graduate from college, though. Lots of people were very, I don't know, people were dumb on social media because people are dumb on social media. Apparently there was some event tied to his podcast and tied to the college graduation that wasn't the actual graduation, but he chugged a beer and people were like, oh, he's so classless, upstaging other people at their graduations, when it wasn't the actual graduation ceremony at all. And people are just being jackasses because people are jackasses on social media. So yay for people being jackasses on social media. And I guess yay for Travis Kelce if he feels good about doing this.
Sure. No word yet on if Taylor Swift will be among those competing.
Definitely, that will be the question everyone will surely have.
Moving on in castings, Don Johnson and Philippa Soo have signed on to star opposite Josh Jackson in Ryan Murphy's ABC drama, Dr. Odyssey, which will be a medical drama set aboard a cruise liner.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Love Boat meets Nip Tuck is what I'm hearing as far as how the series is being described, but ABC declining comment on all that.
Seems reasonable. Seems like as likely an option as anything. So, yay. We mentioned this when it was put into development or a couple weeks ago, and now it's actually been sent to series. CBS has greenlit The Gates, the first Black daytime soap opera in 35 years. And in news that could perhaps open up a time slot for The Gates, CBS has announced that The Talk will end in December after 15 seasons. Tragic.
Tragic. So tragic.
Almost as sad as that Golden Bachelor thing.
Yep, there you go. I got no follow-up, Dan.
It's okay.
Number two.
Continuing along. This week, for the meat of our podcast, we're taking a step back, or taking a 30,000-foot view, or maybe a 10,000-foot view. I'm not really sure how high up we're going to get, but we'll see how high we get. Let's get high, Leslie. I mean, come on. Honestly, 420 coming up and all that
good
stuff.
Anyone who knows me knows how funny I think this is right now.
Anywho, for the bulk of this podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about where things stand as we get towards what used to be upfront season and now is not. We've talked over and over again about the fact that it's not what it used to be. Old Grey Mare, she ain't what she used to be. But there's still enough to talk about for, you know, a somewhat short podcast. And we're going to break it into three segments, which will be a tremendous amount of fun or filler or something. Whatever it is. Anyway, let's start with how things stand. Shows that actually exist already and are either renewed or on the bubble.
Right. So in the last couple of weeks, we've talked a lot in headlines about broadcast shows that have been getting early renewals. And that a lot of those have been happening at CBS, which this week renewed Elspeth for a second season. And that's because CBS plans to announce its schedule on May 2nd. That is very early this year. So feels like a good time to take a look at the state of the industry for broadcast. So we're going to start with ABC, because I do like to do things alphabetically. Renewed already are Abbott Elementary, Grey's Anatomy, The Rookie, Will Trent, 911. So that's the bulk of their dramas. Still on the bubble, you've got The Conners, which could go either way as it awaits word on season 7. The Good Doctor, which is ending this season with season 7, or has already ended. Second-year comedy Not Dead Yet is awaiting word on season 3. Station 19 is ending with season 7. And then you've got some new stuff that's already greenlit, which we'll talk about next. Moving on to CBS, Blue Bloods is ending with season 14 in fall 2024 after CBS reduced costs on that one and split it into two 10-episode seasons. The Chuck Lorre comedies Bob Hart's Abishola and Young Sheldon are both ending this season. CSI Vegas is on the bubble. The Equalizer also on the bubble, but inching closer to a renewal, as I hear Queen Latifah is going to sign a new deal to continue on. CBS already renewed all three of its Dick Wolf FBI shows. Fire Country also got an early season 3 pickup. One of my favorite broadcast shows, Ghosts, was renewed for season 4. NCIS, the flagship, isn't going anywhere. That's coming back for season 22, but NCIS Hawaii is waiting word for season 4. Then you've got multi-camera comedy The Neighborhood, also got the early pickup, that one for season 7. God, where does the time go? On the bubble is So Help Me Todd, as that awaits word on season 3. SWAT, we talked about last week. The only show on broadcast, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, to be canceled twice and live to tell a tale about it. That's coming back for season 8. We just revealed that Elspeth was renewed. That joins fellow rookie Tracker and NCIS Sydney, which was renewed for season 2. But that one was actually greenlit and brought over to CBS proper because of the strikes. It was basically filler content, but it did so well. They're like, well, why not? They've already got a bunch of new shows. We'll talk about that in the next topic. CW, we really don't talk about it anymore because under Nexstar, they're not producing new U.S. scripted originals from the current studio model that they had been following. Their slate remains All-American and its spinoff Homecoming. You've got the final season of Superman and Lois and Walker. So both All-Americans and Walker are all on the bubble. Who knows what Nexstar is going to do, but I wouldn't expect many of those to come back. Over at Fox, a lot of their animated stuff is already renewed. Bob's Burgers, Family Guy, The Simpsons, Krapopolis, and Grimsburg. Those join the Joel McHale comedy Animal Control, which got the early season 3 pickup before season 2 debuted. On the fence, you've got 911 Lone Star, which is an expensive series for them. Accused, Alert, Missing Persons Unit, The Cleaning Lady, The Great North, House Broken, all on the bubble. And they've already ordered a couple of different things for next season. We'll talk about that next. Moving on to NBC. Almost all of the Dick Wolf shows, save for Organized Crime, are renewed. So that's Chicago Fire, Chicago Med, Chicago PD, Law & Order, Law & Order SVU. Those are all coming back. Also coming back are Found and The Irrational, the rookie dramas that completed production before the strike and were able to air during the work stoppage. But a lot of stuff is left on the bubble at NBC. La Brea already ended. We already talked about Law & Order Organized Crime awaiting word. Then you've got Lopez versus Lopez, the multi-camera comedy waiting for word on season 3. Magnum PI ended. Night Court awaiting word on season 3. That was one of the big early pickups the last 2 years. And Quantum Leap already canceled. And that's the state of what we know for sure.
That brings us to our next segment.
Number 3.
These are shows that have already been ordered for next season. New shows, specifically, that have already been ordered for next season. Break it down, Leslie.
Yeah, what's going to be interesting here is that normally this time of year, we would be reviewing the pilot slates. And with that, spoiler alert, is going to be our fourth topic. But because there were so many shows that were ordered last year ahead of the strikes and then pushed off and held because they, well, the strikes stopped everything. So you couldn't write and you couldn't film with actors. So a lot of stuff that was ordered more than a year ago or almost a year ago is now going to be on the shelf for next season. So that has a direct impact on the pilot slate, which will be our next topic. But looking down the new shows for the 2024-25 broadcast season, ABC has High Potential. That's the Drew Goddard show starring Caitlin Olsen, as well as the Ryan Murphy Nip Tuck on the Love Boat, Dr. Odyssey. Those are both for ABC. Over at CBS, they've got five new shows already greenlit. Matlock, which was ordered earlier this year, NCIS Origins, and then Papa's House, which was the comedy that was picked up last May, Watson, more procedurals, and then the Young Sheldon spinoff with Georgie and whoever the other girl is. Sorry, I don't watch Young Sheldon. But yeah, that's a pretty big roster of new shows for CBS on top of a very, very crowded slate of returning shows. So we'll be curious to see what they announce May 2nd when we come down to look at their schedule. My guess is it's going to have some kind of year-round bend to it. Over at Fox, they've got Doc and Rescue High Surf, the latter of which has already scored an order for additional episodes. That's from John Wells. And then the animated show Basic Guys, the Hoagie Brothers, Basic Cable Guys. I don't know. What is this? It's very confusing. It's got like two different titles as part of the same show. It's Universal Basic Guys / the Hoagie Brothers. That's the animated show that's due in 2024. It's also the only new show that Fox has ordered for next season. They are really kind of sitting things out. So, well, they have Doc and Rescue High Surf, but you get the idea. Over at NBC, they've ordered two shows that were from last year, Dr. Wolf and St. Dennis Medical. One's got Zachary Quinto in it, and the other has Wendy McClendon Covey and is a parody. That I'll let you figure out which one of those medical ones is the medical show, the drama, and one of them's a comedy. So you can figure that out. And then the new show, The Hunting Party, which was picked up as part of NBC's script-to-series development model. So it's kind of like a mixed bag, right? We've skipped over pilot season this year for the most part, which we'll talk about next. But more than anything, it's a continuation of things that these networks thought would work a year ago. And obviously the landscape has changed considerably from then to now. So it'll be curious to see how some of these things that sounded good last May will do come September 2024 or January 2025.
I will say again that I will just remain perennially upset that Dr. Wolf is not about a doctor who is also a werewolf. I just, whatever else happens in any of this assortment of stuff, I will always be unhappy that that is the case. So I just need to be on the record with that. No, good God, listening to all of those things on the bubble, it just has me going back to all of the years where I don't know, where I was more invested in broadcast television. Yeah. I just, where there were 5 or 10 or 15 shows where I was like, please don't you dare cancel this. I mean, NBC used to every single year have like 4 comedies that were on the bubble where it was like, if you don't renew the Parks and Recreation, Community, and can probably include Chuck there, we're just going to go crazy. And God,
I remember the Community deals where it was always last minute and it was always packaged with something new that NBC wanted that came from Sony, because Sony is an indie studio with no streaming service of its own and no network counterpart, always had to sell a little bit of its soul to get Community back. So,
but like of those things that you just listed on the bubble, I think the only thing that I actually watch regularly that hasn't been either renewed or canceled is The Great North. Like, honestly, that's that one show out of the entire broadcast slate that's on the bubble. And then there are the one or two shows that I watch, you know, that have been renewed. So Abbott Elementary, a couple of the other animated things, Bob's Burgers and Simpsons, basically. God, that is just craziness. Up next.
Number 4.
And Leslie has teased this, I think, at least 4 different times in the last segment, possibly 5. We are going from shows that were already ordered new for next season to the shockingly small number of pilots. And I'll say this one more time. It used to be that there would be 40 new shows and everyone would put out art for all of them, and we'd make these huge galleries of the new key art and pictures from new shows, and it was a great source of traffic, and it was a whole other different world. Now it's gone, so now we're going to the surprisingly small number of pilots that are still in limbo or in consideration for next season. Still, Leslie, what is still in development to come?
Well, this week there were some rumors that ABC cleaned house for its development slate. Those rumors are not true. Yes, they did pass on a handful of scripts because, as we've noted, a lot of these companies, Disney included, are trying to reduce spending and to right-size their slates. And part of that is realizing that from 10 years ago, when all five networks combined ordered 100 pilots, think of the money with that. If you figure on the low end, $5 million to make a pilot, and you're ordering 100 pilots, you don't need to spend all that money. At the same time, this season, obviously we know ABC has a couple things already greenlit for next year, lots of renewals, but they do have some open slots. And part of what they're trying to figure out is their comedy brand coming out of the success of Abbott Elementary. And both of their pilots are on the comedy side. Both of them are multicams. Ty Burrell is starring in a multicam called Forgive and Forget. And then Tim Allen and Kat Dennings are starring in a multi-camera comedy called Shifting Gears that is kind of set in the automotive space. So those two should fit nicely in, but it's again going to be a question of what happens with the Connors, what happens with Not Dead Yet. So again, they have some decisions to make on what the future of their comedy brand is going to look like. But chances are with Ty Burrell from Modern Family fame and Tim Allen, as well as Kat Dennings, both of those sound really, really like a slam dunk to make it. Shifting over to NBC, they have three pilots this year. And NBC used to be by far the most prolific when it came to ordering comedies and drama pilots. And the fact that they're doing three, even as they have a pretty full slate of renewed shows and procedurals for next year, obviously they've got Suits LA with Stephen Amell. Then they also have the drama Grosse Pointe Garden Society. That one is from Jenna Bans and stars Melissa Fumero, Anna Sophia Robb, and Ben Rappaport. And then on the comedy side, Reba McEntire is coming back with the former showrunner of Reba for a multi-camera comedy as well for NBC. So lots of opportunity here. Safe bet to consider that with the success of Suits on streaming, that they're going to give it a shot with Stephen Amell to have the LA set offshoot air on NBC proper. We'll see if the Netflix halo can extend all the way to broadcast come probably September 2024. So that's a good question. And then CBS really sat out pilot season this year, but they have been quietly developing the Fire Country spinoff Sheriff Country. So again, we know that CBS loves their IP. They love building franchises, and I don't know where they're going to put all these shows. So let's stay tuned to see what happens there. But if it sounds like I'm forgetting a couple networks, it's because I am. The CW and Fox are no longer in the pilot business. And obviously outside of Sheriff Country, CBS is sitting out this traditional pilot season, considering all of the new shows that they've already got, plus their crowded schedule. So we're going to get more insight from CBS May 2nd when they present their schedule to the press.
It's not as exciting as it used to be, but still, that was an awful lot of news that you just sorted through, and I'm sure some people still watch a lot of broadcast TV, and that those people will be extremely happy to have gotten that look from whether it was 30,000 feet or 20,000 feet, however high we got.
Yeah. But I mean, responding to how much stuff on broadcast or how little on broadcast you watch, I too used to watch a ton of broadcast stuff, and a lot of my favorites ended. The Goldbergs was a favorite, obviously no relation there, but now I'm really just down to Ghosts, and we don't even watch that on broadcast. We watch that the next day on Paramount Plus. So yeah. And I still kind of check in on Grey's Anatomy from time to time, but more than anything, I probably read recaps just to see. But yeah, it's weird. You know, send us an email. If you're a diehard broadcast fan, send us an email of what you watch on broadcast. And if you do actually watch live, I'll be curious to hear the results. As usual, we wrap things up with the Critics Corner.
Number five.
Among this week's major new launches, you've got Baby Reindeer on Netflix, Conan O'Brien Must Go over on Max, Under the Bridge on Hulu, The Jinx Part 2 on HBO, and Big Mood on Tubi. Dan, what do you got?
As I like to say, lots and lots of stuff. Oodles of stuff. But I am going to start by backtracking a little bit, because Baby Reindeer premiered last week on Netflix and didn't mention it on the podcast. And I would say probably the biggest reason I didn't mention it on the podcast was because as of when we recorded on Thursday, I'd never heard of Baby Reindeer. So that's a good reason not to talk about it on the podcast. And that's because Netflix decided not to send critics screeners of it, despite the fact that ultimately it ended up being probably the year's best reviewed new British show. So I don't fully understand that, Netflix, but you do you. Anyway, I turned on my Netflix on Thursday, well after we finished podcasting, and boy, the algorithm really wanted me to watch Baby Reindeer. And I watched a couple clips and I said, huh, this looks interesting. And I assume a lot of other people did as well. And it goes once again to show the power of the Netflix algorithm, because I checked at some point a day or two ago and there Baby Reindeer was in the top 10 of Netflix TV shows, ahead of a bunch of very high profile Netflix shows. So Netflix has the ability to steer people to their programming however they want to. I hope they use that power for good and not for evil. In the case of Baby Reindeer, it's probably, I would say, for good. And I have seen people talking about it. And one thing I can say with absolute certainty on Baby Reindeer, and this remains a show that after having watched 6 episodes all on Thursday night, after I was shown that it existed for the very first time, that I'm still honestly not sure what I think about it, which I think is a sign of something. On the other hand, definitely, this was a show that produced 6 episodes worth of reactions out of me, which is also a sign of something. This is a show that if people haven't watched it, or if they have, then they know, it will get under your skin. It is hard to describe what the tone is. I think you could call it a dark comedy, but it's so dark that probably that's not really what it is. It could be a thriller with occasional comedic elements. That might be what it is. Anyway, it is created by star Richard Gadd, and it's based on the one-man show he did. He is a longtime stand-up comic, and he had a stalker, and this is the dramatized version of his experience with the stalker. Basically, a woman comes into the bar that he's working at. His character moonlights as a stand-up comic. He's trying to make it, but he works at a bar, and a woman comes in claiming to be a successful attorney, but she can't afford a drink. He gives her a drink on the house and extends a kindness, and she becomes obsessed. The woman is played by Jessica Gunning, who is fantastic. Richard Gadd is very good. And it just goes increasingly darker and darker as she becomes increasingly obsessed with him. And also as it becomes clear fairly early on, I'm not spoiling anything here, that it's not that he's into the stalking, but he's into certain aspects of the self-affirmation that come from having someone who is obsessed with him. And he does, if not lead her on, he absolutely doesn't stop things in the manner that he should. And it becomes increasingly clear that he has very dark secrets and traumas of his own that this is bringing to the surface. And it becomes increasingly dark as it goes along. I think it's the 4th episode, which is a flashback episode, which a trigger warning deals extensively with sexual assault, and sexual assault in very graphic terms. So yeah, that's kind of where the darkness peaks. The thing that, I don't know if it bothers me, but the thing that didn't work is that to me, you can look at this and you can see the lines between the aspects of the story that are very clearly personal, that are basically a wound that he is picking at. And those are the best parts of the show, the parts that are immediate and lived in. And then there are the parts that are kind of added or contrived for dramatic purposes. And it isn't that it's ever horribly contrived, but there are lots of places where you can see the plot-based seams. And those parts were a little bit less successful for me. But it's a show where I laughed in horror at a number of moments. It's a show where I really had to look away. Things were too dark at other times. Like, what I compared it to in my newsletter, now see this, subscribe, it comes out every Friday, is a kind of I May Destroy You meets King of Comedy, the Martin Scorsese movie. It's hard to describe. It's harder to describe what the tone is. And some people will be so turned off and alienated immediately that they will not want to stick with it. And I don't think those people are wrong. If this is not your tone, you should probably run from it quickly. But I don't know. It got under my skin in a way that I'm not sure that any other show this year has gotten under my skin. And I think there's a lot to be said for a show that is this viscerally effective. So yeah, so that's Baby Reindeer, already on Netflix. You can watch it. The algorithm might have suggested it to you, and you might have been like, wait, I can't watch it if Dan doesn't tell me what he thinks about it. I'm flattered. Now I have. So probably worth checking out. Continuing along, already also having premiered, is Conan O'Brien Must Go on Max, which got a pretty healthy dose of publicity because the Conan O'Brien episode of Hot Ones was incredibly successful and went viral in many, many different ways. It is definitely one of my favorite episodes of that particular show, a show that I watch semi-regularly. I don't watch it all the time, but, you know, I appreciate what the show does. And this was a very, very good episode. And he talked extensively about the show on it and made a lot of fun of HBO Max deciding to become Max. So kudos to Conan O'Brien for that. Conan O'Brien is, if you like Conan O'Brien, is just really good at this. And he's really good at the travel thing. He did a lot of it in the later years of his TBS show. And this is kind of a successor to that. It's a successor to his podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Basically, he's going to a number of different foreign countries and having interactions with fans, but he's also doing the whole travel show thing. And he's very aware of the conventions of the travel show and all of that, makes jokes about the use of drones, makes jokes about all of the things where travel shows go and the hosts eat gross food and are horrified and, you know, all of that. So it's taking off on a lot of those things. One of the jokes that Conan made on the Hot Ones episode was that his goal was to make people dumber by the end of the show than when they came in about all of these different countries, the countries which include Norway, Thailand, Ireland, and Argentina, if anyone is curious. I believe my review initially said Finland. My apologies to anyone who was confused why my review referred to the show as being in Finland, but also referred to Conan being in Oslo. And they were like, wait, that doesn't make any sense. Well, that's why, because I screwed it up. He'd actually been to Finland for one of his earlier shows. Anyway, you don't need to know why I make typos. I just do. It happens. I don't think that's exactly true, but I also don't think this is necessarily the most intelligent or knowledge-based travel show out there. It's just mostly very funny. It's very amusing. It's very amused by the culture. There's a lot of people insulting Conan O'Brien and Conan O'Brien insulting people, which is, again, another thing that he does extremely well. And yeah, I just enjoyed Conan O'Brien Must Go. And it's only 4 episodes, which, if you like this, will not be close to enough. It definitely could be more than that. So if you watch it, maybe there'll be more. There are lots of countries he hasn't been to yet. Continuing along, Under the Bridge on Hulu is one of the week's bigger new reviews. Our colleague Angie Han gave it a mixed review. I've watched 4 episodes. It is developed by Quinn Shepherd, and it's from the book by Rebecca Godfrey, which I know some people liked quite a bit and was quite powerful for people. And it is a limited series on Hulu, as I said, and it's a true crime series. And ultimately, I liked it, but I also felt it was extremely familiar. So it's extremely familiar also in a genre which some people have a bottomless appetite for and other people have no appetite at all for it. So I think you'll kind of know. It's a story about a horrible thing that happens on Vancouver Island in British Columbia. And it's, you know, one of those kids are not all right stories about awful things that teens do to each other, bullying and murder and other things, all being simultaneously investigated by a reporter. In this case, that would be Riley Keough playing Rebecca Godfrey, and also by a local police detective. I guess she might just be a She might just be an officer, played by the great Oscar nominee Lily Gladstone. And so it's very dark. It's very, if you don't like shows about murder investigations involving young women, then this is definitely one you want to steer away from. If you don't like shows about kids doing horrible things to each other and the bullying and just viciousness of teenage girls in particular, that was Rebecca Godfrey's focus in her book, probably want to avoid this as well. I think it has a lot of great atmosphere. I think it, you know, filmed on location, and it feels like a place that's kind of tangential to a place that you know, but not exactly a place we've seen a show like this set, which is a lot like what Vancouver Island is like. And then the lead performances are very good. Riley Keough is very good. Lily Gladstone is great. It's another one of those performances, a little bit like her Killers of the Flower Moon performance, where it feels like it's a really understated performance until you actually pay attention to the little quiet things she's doing and the quiet beats. And then it suddenly is just a really, really good performance. There's a lot going on. It just isn't a loud performance. The supporting cast has some interesting people. I am always happy to see former American Idol contestant Anoop Desai getting acting work. Here he has a really great mustache. So go Anoop dog, as Randy Jackson would say. And yeah, I've watched 4 of the 8 episodes, and I think I probably will watch the second half of the season. There are enough details that feel accurate. There are enough times where what I might compare it to would be something like River's Edge, the great 80s movie, which is just one of those great examples of the kids aren't all right teen freak show drama. That's just a really good example of the genre. I don't know that this is that, but I thought of it a couple times. And so if I think of something that I really like when watching something, usually that's okay. I will watch more of Under the Bridge. I think it has worthwhile observations and a worthwhile approach. I'm not convinced that this is a story that's being best told necessarily in the limited series format. It might just really have been a 2-hour movie that got extended. It was developed as a movie at some point, but I think there's worthwhile stuff. So, okay, so let's get down to the last 2 things premiering on Tubi. Big Mood. Tubi's had a lot of British acquisitions in recent weeks, including Borders, which I reviewed both for the website and on the podcast. Then there was one that was last week that I watched an episode of and didn't work for me at all, and I'm blanking on its name. And then there's this one. And this is another one of those 6-episode British half hours about literal sisters or sisterhood with a kind of mental illness or mental difficulty backdrop that's still a comedy, but also tries to mine dramatic space. There was Dinosaur a couple weeks ago. There was, God, I'm already blanking on all of the titles, but anyway, yeah. So there've been a number of, except Brave Girls is the one I was trying to remember. And this is similarly, it's a story about 2 best friends played by Nicola Coughlan and Lydia West. And the Nicola Coughlan's character, she's a playwright who also is bipolar. She decides to get off of lithium because it dulls her ability to write, and there are emotional consequences. I think a lot of the actual activity in the show, the narrative, the plot, is fairly familiar. I don't think it's breaking all that much new ground, but it's doing what it's doing extremely well. And I think Nicola Coughlan is fantastic. People who know her from Dairy Girls know that she's truly hilarious. People who know her from Bridgerton know that she's more effectively dramatic. I think this could be her best performance to date. I think she's brilliantly funny in Dairy Girls, so I don't know that that I want to take anything away from that just to say that this has a lot of emotional depth that maybe Dairy Girls, her performance there, doesn't have. She's great. Lydia West, who people probably should know from It's a Sin. Probably she should have been nominated for an Emmy for It's a Sin. She was great. I know that was a favorite of yours, Leslie. You're nodding politely.
Yes, watch It's a Sin on Max. A+.
Yeah, she's great. And really and truly, if It's a Sin had gotten a little bit more awards juice, I think she unquestionably would have been in Emmy conversations, and then she didn't get there. But she's great here also. There are lots of really fun episodes. One of the early episodes, if you're a fan of Love Actually, it features a Love Actually birthday party and a cameo from one of the members of the Love Actually cast. No, not that one. No, not that one. Nope, not that one either. Nope, not that one. Ah, there you are. That one. Exactly. And if you don't like Love Actually, and I don't particularly like Love Actually, it's kind of both in love with Love Actually and making fun of Love Actually. It's a good balance, so I think that should amuse people who are in both camps on Love Actually. And it takes the aspects of the mental illness and bipolarity, it takes them seriously. It doesn't just use them as a cheap joke. And I think that where it goes, I would like to see a second season of the show. I think it's a good show. And again, it's another one of these British shows, which are 6 half-hour episodes that you really and truly can just watch in 3 hours, basically. And this one is easier to watch than Baby Reindeer, which is just really hard to watch. I don't think it's as viscerally effective as Baby Reindeer. And finally, the second season of The Jinx premieres this weekend on HBO. Regular listeners will know that The Jinx was my number one show of 2015, and that I think it is absolutely one of the best true crime pieces of storytelling made for television or movies. I, you know, can think of other great examples, adaptations of In Cold Blood, the book In Cold Blood, etc. But it's great. I think that The Jinx is brilliant. And the second season, it kind of puts to the test what it was that was most effective about The Jinx. And so truly, it's hard not to feel like what was most effective about The Jinx was the presence of Robert Durst and then the grand shocking revelation in the finale. And of course, the new season cannot have that. In fact, the most recent of the Robert Durst trials was very well publicized, got a lot of coverage, didn't slip under the radar at all. And then Robert Durst, well, he died. So a lot of the things and places that this story is going are going to be familiar. And through 4 episodes, there's nothing that rivals what happened in the first series in terms of just shock value. And also because he was arrested on the eve of the finale of the first season of The Jinx, both the first season of The Jinx is a major part of the plot, but also it means that he was largely incarcerated and on trial. And so he's not sitting down for interviews with Andrew Jarecki and company. So there isn't that either. There's still lots of great interviews with lots of people with deep involvement in the case. And it is still extremely well made. I just think that much more than the first season, which kind of elevated above and transcended the norms of the genre, this one to me feels like a very good example of the genre. So that's a little bit less effective, a little bit less meaningful, but still really solid as the thing that it's being. So that's The Jinx Part 2. And to just quickly recap, Baby Reindeer, it will either horrify you and you'll be unable to watch, or you'll find it incredibly powerful. And so I think it's worth checking out, but also don't feel bad if you cannot watch it. I understand. Conan O'Brien Must Go is much easier to watch. 4 episodes. You will laugh. It's very funny. I liked it a lot. Under the Bridge, another one in a genre where some people simply aren't there. That's on Hulu. And so it's got some good performances, good setting, interesting stuff. I've watched 4 episodes. I will watch more. Big Mood, couple of great performances. That's on Tubi. Tubi is accumulating some solid originals. Good for them. And The Jinx, a little bit less than season 1, but still quality true crime television. Lots of TV, Leslie.
For more of Dan's weekly recommendations, be sure to subscribe to The Hollywood Reporter's Now See This newsletter and bookmark thr.com/TV-reviews for more. That feels like a good place to wrap things up. Thank you, as always, for listening to TV's Top 5, The Hollywood Reporter's TV podcast.
Be sure to subscribe on all of your various podcasting platforms. If you like us, rate us. If you really like us, write a little reviewy thing. Those suckers do help spread the word of mouth. Come say hi to us on the social medias, where she is, as always, at Snoodit with 2 O's, and I am, as always, at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. If you have questions for future mailbag segments, though, you can email us at tvstop5@thr.com. That's tvstop5@thr.com. Until next week, Leslie.
Until next week, Dan.